TV Campfire Podcast.
I was like, yep, okay, so you win for the week.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken
record. Oh, no! We're fans.
It's one of the best things on television.
Oh! All right, we got your hold of
it. Oh, no, you didn't.
We talk TV.
That was the best scene ever. Like, that blew me away.
It was absolutely amazing. I just couldn't believe it.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 607, and I'm Libby, your host. And this week, we have returning guests.
Hi, this is Yu Sun, costume designer and TV enthusiast from Los Angeles.
Hi, this is Allison, and I write reviews for 6 Degrees of Geek.
And this is Tom. I chair the Department of Visual and Media Arts at Palm Beach Atlantic University in Florida and host the Scream Tom podcast on Spotify and iTunes.
All right, Tom, hit us with the news. What you got?
I have the news. ABC has announced that Jason George is going back to Grey's Anatomy as a series regular since Station 19 has been canceled. Rob Thomas was supposed to be the showrunner of Caitlin Olsen's new show, High Potential, but he is leaving that because of creative differences. AMC has greenlit the third Anne Rice Immortal Universe series. This one will be about the Talamasca, which I just asked Allison off podcast in our text thread about that a couple weeks ago. Amazon has announced that Jensen Ackles will lead the action thriller Countdown from One Chicago alum Derek Haas. The upcoming biblical drama House of David has cast Broadway star Michael Iskander as David, Ali Silliman as King Saul, Stephen Lang from the Avatar movies as Samuel, and Ayelet Zurer from Man of Steel and Daredevil as Queen Ahinoam. They also announced that The Boys Season 5 will be its final one, but Gen V Season 2 has added Hamish Linklater to the cast as Cypher, the newly appointed Dean of Godolkin University. Apple TV Plus picked up Palm Royale for Season 2. Marion Cotillard will join The Morning Show for Season 4. However, Juliana Margulies is not returning. CBS announced that Rachelle Ates is leaving SWAT Season 8 for the medical drama Watson. She's going to play Morris Chestnut's title character's ex-wife, Mary. Although SWAT does hope to have her recur as Hondo, Shamar Moore's wife, in that season. And Blue Bloods, which is ending with the second half of Season 14 in the fall, they're talking about doing a spinoff slash continuation series. Bet you won't have Tom Selleck in it because he's the most expensive of that cast. CW has renewed All-American for Season 7 and The Chosen for Season 4. However, they canceled All-American Homecoming after 3 seasons. Reminder, it was previously picked up. So this is part of that new Nexstar regime. Disney Plus, despite all the fan toxicity, Acolyte reached 11.1 million views in 5 days, nearly 3 million short of Ahsoka. I remind people, Ahsoka was based on existing characters. This is all new people. Fox announced Sierra McClain is leaving 911 Lone Star after 4 seasons, and there are rumors swirling that Season 5 will be its last, which makes sense since the mothership show jumped networks to ABC. HBO picked up House of the Dragon for Season 3. Hulu announced that Grace Van Patten, formerly of 8 Perfect Strangers, will play Amanda Knox in Hulu's upcoming Knox-produced limited series after Margaret Qualley left the show. Max picked up My Adventures with Superman for Season 3, and they're also developing a Blue Beetle animated series, which will be part of the official DCU under James Gunn, and they're negotiating to get the cast to reprise their voices. Max also raised their prices for the regular ad-free tier to $17 and the ultimate ad-free to $21.
What's the difference?
I guess the ultimate means no ad. The other has light ads. I just think it's crazy. They also...
They're nickel and diming everyone is basically
They're nickel and diming everybody. Netflix announced that Arcane will end with Season 2, but there are other League of Legends stories to tell. The Upshaws will end with Season 5. Mia McKenna-Bruce from How to Have Sex will lead the Agatha Christie series The Seven Dials Mystery with Helena Bonham Carter and Martin Freeman. And that's from Chris Chibnall, who created Broadchurch and also ran the Jodie Whittaker seasons of Doctor Who Into the Ground. Excuse me. Yahya Abdul-Mateen. I love her, but he didn't figure out how to write the show. And she gets the blame. Yahya Abdul-Mateen II is in for to play the Denzel Washington character John Creasy in the upcoming Man on Fire series adaptation, which is basically Equalizer with more blood and violence. Coleman Domingo, Oscar nominee, and Erica Henningsen from Broadway's Mean Girl are joining Tina Fey and Steve Carell in their fourth season's adaptation. Cillian Murphy will star in and produce the Peaky Blinders film, directed by Tom Harper and written by series creator Stephen Knight. And Tyler Perry will write and direct Straw, a drama with Taraji P. Henson, Sherry Shepherd, and Tiana Taylor. Paramount Plus has picked up Criminal Minds Evolution for season 3, before season 2 premiered. Paul Giamatti has been cast in Starfleet Academy season 1 as the recurring villain, who has a link to one of the cadets' pasts.
Huh.
Dan Butler, Bulldog, and Edward Hibbert, Gil Chesterton from classic Frasier, will reprise their roles on Frasier season 2. And Yvette Nicole Brown will play the sister of Frasier's boss, Olivia. And if you've watched the show, the two sisters are both academics and highly competitive. Aidan Ayeri, who from I Love That For You, who has joined the upcoming Peacock comedy series from Steph Curry and Adam Pauly. And finally, Starz has announced that Power Book 4 will end after 3 seasons, but they have future plans for the character Tommy.
Wow, a lot of news.
That is a lot of news. All right, let's start talking about the shows. First up, we're going to talk about Interview with a Vampire, episodes 4 and 5. And I'm trying to remember. I remember which 5, because that's the big flashback episode.
4, if Claudia enjoyed playing this baby doll character as much I suspected she would. As in, not at all.
And I like that she tried to get a friend, though friend is a stretch. I'm not sure where that friendship was going exactly.
Yeah, I didn't know she was going to bite her, if she was going to try to sleep with her or what, but...
I know, it was...
vampires put the kibosh on that when they found out.
No, but I think what's interesting about that relationship is I think Claudia didn't know what she wanted. Like, mm-hmm. She knew she wanted something for herself, and she thought that they were developing a relationship in an interesting way. But I don't even think she knew where that relationship was going. But I think she wanted to find out. And honestly, so did I. And then they basically were like, no human friends for you. and your punishment is you have to wear this goofy dress all the time. Like, okay.
And the thing
which
is,
seems kind of counterintuitive, because I mean that she's going to get it messy and they're going to have to fix it and replace it for the show, and it's like, you know, I mean, that made no sense to me, but from a purely practical standpoint, it's like, you know, you can't do that with something you're going to wear on stage, but whatever. I was interested in this particular relationship that she had going, because they're doing a variation on what was done in the book, where Claudia finds a woman who has lost her child and she's able to act like a surrogate mother to this very young Claudia. They have this bonding between the two of them. And it, with this, obviously, that she doesn't need that sort of things, but they're trying to bring in the same character, Madeline, and do something else with her. And so I was really interested to see how they're going to work this relationship in and what the dynamics of this relationship are going to be. I think that they haven't finished with her. I'm certain they're going to bring her back and do more with her character. And I am really fascinated to see where they go with this.
The actor who played the friend looks a lot like one of my students. So I was like, oh, wow, Rebecca's got a twin. versus contemporary Ginger. I like this actor who plays Claudia so much better than the last one, because I care for her. And she can play a range of emotions instead of Janie one note.
Yeah, well, I don't want to keep beating up on the original actress, because I've seen her in other things in which she's fine. She's in Avatar and she does a good job in that. But I don't think that she was really quite right for this role. And now that they've replaced her with this actress, I think this actress is right for Claudia. And I think what she brings to the role is more interesting, but I don't want to keep beating up on the original Claudia, because, you know, it's not her responsibility that she was maybe not the ideal person for the part. She is talented. She does other things well. So yeah, I don't want to keep going back and forth with the comparison with her. I really do like this woman this year.
Before we get to the flashback episode, just say, I want more Ben Daniels. He's so good at everything. He plays charm. He plays malevolence.
Then that scene for dinner when he was like mocking him and like repeating the words with him, that was so just like, there was something dangerous about it, but there was the level of mock of it, like, was here. Like, you
I'm
felt
kind of
insulted.
Not digging Armand in either time period. He's like a git. He's a pretentious git in the past and a pretentious git in the 70s flashback.
Oh, you mean Armand?
Yeah, he's kind of,
I didn't think Armand was that bad until the flashback. Once I got to the flashback, I was like, oh, this dude, yeah, no.
Well, they've been dropping breadcrumbs that, I mean, he's not to be trusted. From the very beginning, he's this figure that, you know, I mean, there was something about when Louis takes his hand in the first season and says, this is the love of my life, that you're looking at it and going, is he really?
wondering, I mean, is Louis under Armand's thrall?
Yeah,
I think it's pretty obvious there's more than just, you know, the augmented memories going on. This is augmented feelings as well.
Right, because there's a part where they're arguing. They leave the room, and then when they come back, they're all lovey-dovey. It's like a weird, you're like, what just happened?
Yeah.
And what just happened was Armand did the mind control Jedi mind trick on him, and Louis was like, oh, he's the love of my life. So Yusen, your thoughts? You haven't talked?
Yeah, you know, I'm enjoying the series, but I'm missing Lestat, you know, I'm enjoying Armand more. I'd mentioned I was questionable on him, and clearly this season is going to be about Armand and Louis. So, I mean, it's kind of pointless to miss Lestat, but, I still do. So, there's a dangerousness that's lacking in Armand for me. Like, he's supposed
even with
to
the mind control, even though he.
Yeah, even with the mind control, like, I don't know if it's the acting or the, like, I didn't personally feel that threatened, like, for Louis. I don't feel that from Armand. I don't know if it's the acting or the writing,
well,
but
I mean, he's not supposed, that is Armand's thing, is he comes off as non-threatening and you're actually in control and I'm not really in control. I'm just doing what you want me to do. And he's not supposed to be dangerous. That's his whole thing, is that you're supposed to underestimate him. You're supposed to think he's not a dangerous guy. And the big reveal in the flashback episode, which we're kind of like leaning into, is that now you can't trust anything you know about him at all. And you can't even trust your own mind. And that's actually scarier than any dangerous person that there is.
Well, I know, but I don't feel it, is what I'm saying. Like, I was confused in the flashback episode. I kind of had to, like, pay attention, like, you know, to watch it twice and kind of be like, wait, what's going on? And, like, I don't know, maybe it was just a little too subtle for me, but, or I just wasn't paying attention, but
yeah, that's
I don't know.
Yeah, it was very scary. It was, when they do the big reveal, it actually makes you go back and think about every interaction that we've seen so far and realize they weren't what we thought. That's one of those reveals.
It's very sinister.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sinister.
Yeah, it's supposed to be sinister. But to me, Armand isn't sinister enough.
He's not
supposed
to be. That's the thing. That is the joke. That is exactly correct. He is playing the character exactly the way he's supposed to. You're not supposed to be afraid of him. You're not supposed to think he's dangerous.
No, but when the reveal happens, I should be like, oh, like, I get it. Like, you know, oh, he was,
that
he's
has
so
nothing to
innocent.
Do with the acting. I feel like that's if you didn't respond correctly, that doesn't feel like I just want to, let's just keep moving on.
Yeah, I mean, this is my impression of it. It was less impactful for me because I just didn't, I don't know how to describe it, but I was a little bit bored. I didn't feel that, like it was such a crazy reveal that was like, so I don't know. I'm enjoying this season, but not as much as, I think if it wasn't for, the new,
Claudia,
I would definitely not be enjoying this season as much. You know, I feel like she's the strongest part of the season for me. And so I'm enjoying her acting and her storyline most out of everything for me. That's just how I'm feeling right now.
Allison, you were about to say something before we move on?
Well, I was going to say that I don't think that this was meant to be some, like, surprise reveal, like, oh my God, is that what's happening? I think that this was supposed to be, like I said, they've been dropping breadcrumbs all the way through this. So I think that this is, like, the culmination of all of these things being put together. So when you see what it is specifically that he's doing to Louis, which is not only altering his memories, but also gatekeeping on what and who he communicates with. The right. whole thing later on, I'm going to segue into the next episode where he's burnt and he's terribly wounded, and he's lying there helpless, and Armand acts as a psychic communication between Lestat and Louis. And he's very careful about what it is he will say to Louis that Lestat is telling him, specifically when Lestat is saying, tell him I love him.
And yes.
He absolutely does not.
Well, Armand is, he is, I mean, all these dysfunctional vampire romances. He's a bad boyfriend.
Well, yes. the thing is, he gets jealous of
LeRoy.
That's the biggest thing about Armand. He's insecure in his relationship with Louis. He believes that Louis loves Lestat more than him, which is true.
Probably true.
And instead of like a normal person breaking up with Louis and being like, I deserve better than a boyfriend who loves this other dude more than me, he's forcing it.
And he's controlling him, which is a really sinister form of gaslighting.
Yes. Basically. Well, the thing is, I think it goes back to he showed what his roots were. He was a slave, and he was kept as a slave for a long time, even by the one who turned him and supposedly loved him, kept him in slavery for a long time, and really messed with his head. I mean, we see when he takes over the coven, he's got all these weird ideas about rules and laws, and they have to live in the sewer, and instead of trying to actually have a livable life. So it's like this notion of punishment that he's got in his head. And I think that in his head, that's the dynamic of any relationship, is there has to be someone who's in control and someone who's basically a slave. And if he is not going to be the slave, he has to be the master. And he has to be in control, and he has to dominate, even if it's, pretending that he's not in the dominant position.
Yeah, he's pretending. So he's letting Louis think that he's the dominant one. But
right,
that's
exactly.
What's happening.
But
right.
He's controlling, and he can't have a normal relationship of two equals. This is the only thing that he's learned. And so this is how he operates. This is how he functions.
Yeah, so I think real quick, I want to talk about the flashback with the reporter from the 70s and
Malloy.
I love that moment where he was like, so did we have sex? Like, I love that moment where he's trying to remember, and he's like, so I remember taking the drugs and then the bite, and then what happened after is like, was that, did we have a thing? And I like that Lou was like, yeah, no, we did not. And he was like kind of disappointed. I thought that was really pretty funny. But I do actually really like their relationship. I like Malloy and Louis's relationship, that there's something about Malloy that draws Louis to him, that makes him want to talk to him. And
he's not freaking Armand.
Well, yeah, he's not Armand. And Armand, of course, can't stand it and can't figure out, why would you want to talk to this regular human guy more than me? I'm more interesting. Obviously not.
And oh, but I have to say that conversation where he was just brutal to him, he was like, you're the most boring person I've talked to in a decade or something. I was like, oh my God. Like that is, that was pretty cruel, but I felt like he was being honest. That was one of those moments where you're drunk and you say the absolute truth. And,
Vino Veritas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Armand couldn't handle it. And I was like, that is the point where a normal person would just be like, all right, we're done. We walk away.
That's not how Armand rules, though.
That's right.
No, that is not. But yeah, I thought the flashback parts were really good with Malloy, and I like the two of them working out what happened. So that was pretty cool. All right, well, let's move on. I think we're mostly saying thumbs up-ish.
Oh, definitely. Oh, yeah. I loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I thought it was one of my favorites. The flashback I thought was really great. Only my disappointment is now we're going to go back to the present, or the part with Claudia, which I like Claudia, but I kind of want to know more about this other thing, too. They've introduced this other storyline that I now want resolved.
Well, I don't think they're going to let go of it. It's just but we are going to go back to Claudia.
Yeah, we're going to go
Question.
Back to that. Go ahead.
Was Malloy, present Malloy, lying about the reconstruction of the artifact? Was that part of the thing that the Talamasca guy?
The Talamasca guy was.
So he was lying about the research assistant. And it looked like Louis might have suspected he was not telling the truth.
Possibly, yeah.
But he wouldn't know. He wouldn't be like, oh, it's CIA. Like, I don't think he would have jumped to that.
Yeah, and you have to understand, too, they're bringing in stuff from the Mayfair Witches book. Because the Talamasca... They were not in Interview in the Vampire at all, and they only are peripherally and just kind of mentioned in most of the other vampire books. They don't play a big part. They're bringing them in because it is a shared universe. So I'm interested to see where they go with that.
All right, well, let's wrap that up. Let's move on. Next up, we're going to talk about Star Wars Acolyte, and I blame Peter for this because he spoiled me for the whole twin thing before I started watching the show.
Peter should know better.
He said he saw a review and he was like, oh, and that they're twins and blah, blah, blah. He's like, oh, it's probably not that big of a deal. And I was like, why are you telling me this? And then when I watched it, I was like, son of a, cause that really made that story very different for me experiencing it, not knowing that they were twins. But knowing that they're twins totally changed my viewing experience. And I'm kind of 50 lashes with a wet noodle.
They do let you know about halfway through the first episode.
You do, but it was cool. It would have been cool not knowing is what I'm saying. Yeah. Because
I did not know. And I found it confusing. It's like when they went to the other sister on board the ship. I was like, is this a flashback? Is this but it didn't seem like cool to me when they finally said, oh yeah, you got a sister. It was like, oh, okay. That makes sense. Now I'm not confused, but it wasn't like, ooh, neat. It was just, okay, that was confusing. Now it's not.
I thought it was gutsy of them to promote the out of Carrie Lynn Moss. And then kill her in the first 5 minutes.
Before the credits. Before the credits.
Before the title card. I thought that was very ballsy. Although, obviously, we get her in flashbacks.
I was about to say, she's in episode 3. And I'm sure
she doesn't do a lot in it. But yes, she is there.
Yeah. I think the show is fine. It hasn't blown me away yet. But the amount of vitriol... Really, it's like...
Well, let's not talk. I wanted to do a review. Let's do it. Okay. I don't want to care about other people. What did you think?
I like Amanda Stenberg. I think she's good. Now, I like her. I mean, as the evil twin, she seems more Janie One Note. But as the good twin, she seems more conflicted about what's going on.
Well, I think so far we're mostly getting her point of view. And I feel like there's going to be an episode coming up where we're going to get May's point of view. Because the flashback episode is 100% Osha's point of view. And everything that we've seen so far has been Osha's point of view. Other than we've seen some of May's actions, but we don't understand her reasoning behind her actions. And I really feel like we're going to get an episode soon where we're going to find out why she hates these Jedi, why she, like, you know, get her reasoning behind it.
Well, I think we did already in the flashback. I mean, I personally got some of her ideas about what's going on. In fact, for the first time, I sympathized a little bit with her character because she's been raised in this coven. They seem like a benign group of people. Right. They don't seem evil in the slightest. And, you know, they just want to practice what they're doing on this little planet that, you know, was out of the way.
They're on that planet hiding from the Jedi specifically.
Right, because the Jedi don't tolerate other groups. And we know also from the other Star Wars movies that take place later on that when you say, you know, witch about someone practicing the Force, this is a pejorative. This is not just a benign coven. This is something that is regarded as evil. So it's clearly demonized later on. And yet this little group doesn't seem to be bothering anybody. And the Jedi won't tolerate them, won't put up with them, and want to steal their children away from them. And we've got these two twins, one of whom isn't really interested in growing up to be a witch and being stuck on this planet. She wants to see the galaxy. And then the other one, May, is devoted to the coven, has, you know, been raised in this lore, looks forward to becoming a witch, and wants to remain here. She doesn't want to go off with the Jedi. So you can, I think, you know, setting things on fire is maybe a little extreme of getting out of this, but I do understand.
I think she did set her sister's room on fire, but all those other witches did not die.
Yeah, I think that there's something else, because especially because we have the other Jedi later on saying, I was expecting you, and I was, you know, he took the poison willingly.
Willingly.
So there's something going on there. There's scenes. When I was watching it, I was thinking, there's a big scene that we haven't seen in the middle
of it. Right, because that's why I said this is all May's point of view. We saw what she thinks happened.
Right, but I think even so, I still felt sympathy toward May as the, you know, so-called evil sister. It's like, oh, this makes some kind
of sense. It made me annoyed with Osha. Like, I get that Osha wants to see the galaxy, but she was endangering everyone.
Exactly.
With her behavior. And then when there's that moment where her mom was like, if you go with the Jedi, you will never see me again, ever. And she's crying about it, but she's like, okay, I guess I'll never see you again. And I was just like, really? Like, I can't even imagine being like 10 years old and being cool with never seeing my mother again.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't like her mom was evil or anything. No. And I was just like, and then you think about the Jedi, when they take the children, they never allow them to see their family, like, ever. Mm-hmm. And that's insane. And
yeah, that's crazy cult territory.
Like, this is not a good thing, guys. Like, what?
What's interesting is these three episodes have very succinctly kind of reframed what we know about the Jedi. Because it's the whole time that the Jedi were not perfect. I mean, they basically invite Palpatine, you know, give him, you know, the ability to go from Chancellor to Emperor almost on a silver platter. But this is showing that there were problems with the Jedi, their practices, their sect, their prejudices, etc.
I think that there have been like indications of this in when you get away from the main story from the movies and you get into the TV shows and the animated programs. Because I remember there was a couple of animated sequences that they did when they invite other animators to do stories within this universe. And one of them in particular was very much about how the Jedi actively hunt down Force-sensitive children and force them to become Jedi, whether they want to or not. Mm-hmm. And there were like, there was a brother and a sister who were hiding out from them deliberately because they did not want to be part of this. And so they've been indicating for a long time, at least along the fringes of the Star Wars universe, that, yeah, the Jedi are maybe not as great as we have been led to believe. There are flaws there. There are cracks there. There are things that are dubious morally
and ethically. They call them monks because they're not also supposed to have kids. Yet Anakin 100% went ahead and had twins.
He wasn't supposed to.
I know he wasn't supposed to. And the fact that, okay, so they take these kids when they want to take them when they're around 3 or 4. Like, that's when they want to grab them. And then they inundate them with all these rules and these beliefs and stuff like that. And then they say, and then you can never have children. Like, that's insane. How has nobody thought that this is insane?
Yeah.
So, and I think in the first Star Wars movies, they called them a wacky religion occasionally, and they call them...
Oh, in episode 4, crazy old wizard.
Yeah, they've called them stuff like that, but it wasn't...
Well, it didn't really stick because at that point, remember, the Empire is in charge, so of course
there
they're
are
trying
no,
to...
And there's no Jedi Council.
And Obi-Wan's the first one we meet, and then Luke becomes one.
Yeah, but he doesn't get inundated with all the rules and all the things and da-da-da. So we don't really understand what the Jedi were like before until we get to really the prequels. And then the prequels don't really explain it very well either. It's not until you get until the animated series, because I remember Obi-Wan fell in love with somebody on Mandalore, and he was freaking out that he fell in love with her because he could never be with her because rules, 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 and he tried to avoid her and stuff. And I was like, wait, why can he not be with... Like, I remember being confused about, like, why... Anyway, we're getting off track. I just realized this is not a Star Wars podcast.
Well, maybe not, because I'm kind of hoping that this series eventually, I think that, you know, they've shown some indication that that's the direction they're going in. And I hope they explore that more, because that is philosophically an interesting thing to do.
And it's so refreshing to not be in a Skywalker adjacent time frame.
Oh,
that's true, too. We're what, a couple hundred years before?
We're in the High Republic. This is toward the end of the High Republic.
Right.
Yeah. So it's 100 years prior.
Yeah. So it's at the high, but it's also at the beginning of their decline.
Yeah. And apparently rise of this.
I want to talk about Carrie Ann Moss and how she makes a fantastic Jedi, even, and that fight scene was amazing.
Was
I
really
loved
good.
It. I thought it was great. And I was so disappointed when she died. And yes, we may get her in flashbacks and however, but I mean, I was so psyched when they started the show like that and the fight scene. And I thought, oh man, this is it. This is great. This is what I signed up for. And she's dead. And I thought,
I suspected that when I saw the trailer. I did suspect she wasn't going to make it out of the opening.
Really?
Really?
Yeah, because every time they showed the trailer, it was always in the same place. She was never in another scene. All the footage that they showed her was in the same bar. And I was like, oh no, she's going to die in that bar.
Right. Well, I was not happy about it. I was very surprised. So the other thing I wanted to talk about, though, was Saul being a Jedi. I'm as an Asian American, as a Korean American, I'm very psyched that we have a Korean Jedi. But I'm not sure if I'm sold on his performance. I haven't decided. Like, I like it, but the one thing I find that I was interested in is he doesn't move like a Jedi for me. Like, when he's, like, walking, you know what I mean? Like, through his scenes and stuff, I found it to be very sort of like, dopey-dopey-dopey-doo. And I thought, you know, like, I was like, that just isn't moving like a Jedi for me. So I was a little disappointed in that.
Honestly, I think he's struggling with his English because he does not speak fluent English.
No.
Yeah.
So, no. He was, in case you saw Squid Game, he was the star of Squid Game.
Right.
Oh, wow.
He had a very, very different character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've seen him in interviews, and he does not speak English well enough to do the interviews. So if his English is not that great, then I'm thinking he's spending all his brain power phonetically articulating English, and he's doing, I think, in his earnestness, I buy it, but I also think he's lying. Like, there's an earnestness where he feels like he needs to protect Osha, like he
Osha.
Really, but I feel like the motivation behind that need to protect her is based on guilt.
Yep.
So I think there's a lot of stuff going on, and he's conveying all of that. So I think conveying the emotional realism of his character in a really good way. I haven't seen him use a lightsaber yet, so that's going to be the test. Like, let's see what he can do with a lightsaber.
That's my worry, because I was already like, well, he just walking across the floor and I don't feel the Jedi coming from him. So I'm worried about him wielding the lightsaber. So, you know, as proud and happy as I am, I'm really hoping he like steps up and that, you know, that I enjoy it. So we'll see. But other than that, I mean, you know, I'm thinking the series, it's not like the best series ever, but it's not boring. It's not like, you know, it's not.
I'm interested.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. So, yeah. You know,
for me,
I'm enjoying
it's kind
it.
Of in the middle. It's not like at the depths of things like Boba Fett or Obi-Wan,
oh,
you know, things like that. But it's not at the heights of
Andor.
Yeah,
Andor.
Oh, absolutely not Andor. It's somewhere in the middle, and I'm enjoying it. It's entertaining me. I'm not bowled over by it, but it's fun to watch, you know.
I like it's a murder mystery. I want to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
I got to say, when the Trade Federation ship with Osha on it gets the traffic stopped basically by the Jedi, it's like, it really gives you a feel, oh, these guys again.
Jeez. All right. Well, let's wrap this one up. I think overall thumbs up. But, you know, waiting to see, you know, where it's going. Next up, we're going to talk Dark Matter, and we're late to the game, and that's 100% my fault. I was late jumping on the Dark Matter train. I was resistant because I saw the trailer, and I was like, another multiverse? Really? How do you want to do another multiverse?
You got source material.
It doesn't matter. I'm just so over the multiverse, and I was just like, okay. And I didn't jump on until everybody else was like, no, it's so good. You got to watch it.
It is good.
Fine. And the first episode's hard, though, man. That first episode was...
It does take its time to get started.
It really takes its time. And it's like, I was like, dude, you're in a multiverse. You've been kidnapped by yourself. How do you not recognize your own voice? Like, I was just getting kind of irritated by the first episode. But people kept telling me you got to get past the first one. So I was like, fine. So it wasn't until the second episode. And by the way, the alternate version of himself that like takes over his life, super jerk, can't stand that dude. And he just
thinks, a jerk.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil stuff, but don't
spoil stuff. I've only seen two episodes. So, I just was like, yeah. And then somebody pointed out to me, it was like, oh, he's not the hero. And I was like, yeah, I know he's not the hero. But he's still kind of the same guy, so I thought that fundamentally that, no, but yes, it's the multiverse. He is his twin, so, you know. But I like the journey of the good guy trying to figure out what's going on. It just took him longer than I would have liked. Though I did like that he just didn't trust anybody. He was like, yep, nope, I'm getting out of here. And so that part was good. And I have to say that when the second episode ends with the security person from the company just showing up talking about, yeah, we got to take you back. I just thought they were just going to grab him and take him back. And nope, she shoots the other woman in the head. And I was like, what? So I had to use a lot of self-control to keep myself from watching the next episode. So I understand how you guys flew through all of these. Really fast, like I get it, but I was like, no, for the podcast I shall stay true. But now that's probably exactly what I'm gonna watch as soon as we're done with this podcast. So now I'm like, yes, watch the next couple episodes.
Watch three and four.
What'd you say?
Watch three and four. It gets better. It's
I'm sure it does, because now it's like, oh, this company is evil. It's like, oh, we're shooting people in the head. All right, okay. So I don't know entirely what's happening other than from my guess, and don't confirm it guys, cause I know you guys are all ahead. From my guess, it looks like the evil one, instead of marrying his wife,
Jason A and Jason B.
Which one is A and which one's B?
A is prime. A is the prime. one we root for.
The one that's married to Jennifer Connelly and has a kid.
Yeah. Okay. So that's it. Okay, so B basically made this company. He figured out how to switch multiverses. He figured out the technology. Him and a team went out in an experiment to do it. Something happened. We don't know what, at least I don't yet. And he's like, you know what? I see the potential of this. I can take over my old life. Let me stalk myself for a while. But the company, I'm not entirely sure what the purpose of the experiment was from the onset, if they're willing to kill people to keep this a secret. So all of these things are a mystery and it all seems really interesting. So yeah, I'm, and then the cover art suggests lots of versions. So I can't wait for that to happen. So I'm in and I think it's good. And please don't give me spoilers. All right.
I'll speak because I can't give you spoilers. I also stopped watching on purpose. I only watched one other extra episode and I was going to keep going, but then I thought, you know, the way that I was told that it was so good and the way that it was, you know, so very bingeable, I thought I've got to stop now or else I won't stop at all. So I'm not too far ahead of you, Libya. But interestingly, I had the opposite experience. I thought episode one, I was very invested in episode one, and I thought, and I was very like intrigued by it, and I thought, oh, this is great. And then episode two actually kind of slowed down for me and got me annoyed, I think, in the way that you were mentioning about how, like, you know, how can you not guess that this is a multiverse, you know, and how can you not figure this out for yourself? So it was a little annoying. But I'm really enjoying the first two episodes. I'm really enjoying his relationship with his wife. I, you know what I mean? It's lovely. It's healthy. It's beautiful. It's sweet. I mean, you know, I'm so used to seeing, unhealthy relationships and kind of, you know, people going through all this strife and this and that. And it's just kind of yummy and lovely to like see a relationship that, you know, two people in love, raising a kid and this and that. And so, I mean, obviously they're focusing on that to show you why Jason B wants that life, you know. I mean, they have to show it so that it's really believable that he's going to do all this stuff to have that life and to make it, you know, worthwhile. So so as far as I'm concerned, I'm sold too, and I'm very excited. I did actually I was not able to resist the shot through the head, because once she got shot, I thought, oh my god, what happens now? And so I hit play. So I did watch episode three, but I obviously won't talk about it. But yeah, no, I'm excited about the show. I think multiverse or not, it's shot a little weird though. Is it me? But it definitely seems like it's shot in Vancouver or Canada or someplace like not where it's supposed to be.
Yeah, they did not shoot it in Chicago.
Yeah, I was going to say it does not feel legitimately like
Chicago and matte painting, and then, you know, they go elsewhere.
There were a couple of scenes that were in Chicago because Peter's from Chicago and he was like, oh, that's down the street from my friend's house. So they did shoot some stuff on location.
They did. Yeah. So I don't know. As I watched the show, as I keep watching the show, that's the only thing. It seems a little not expensive. It's not cheap. It doesn't look cheap, but it just doesn't look like high quality.
Money on the production value is what you're saying.
Yeah. Right. So that I noticed. Other than that, I'm enjoying the show.
Guys, Tom, Allison, really quick, because we need to keep rolling. We need to keep moving.
I love it. And Joel Edgerton, Jason A and B are so completely different from each other and yet have those similarities. That's all I can say.
Yeah, no, I do like the way he defines between the two. I'm never lost saying, which Jason am I watching? I always know, okay, that's Jason A, that's Jason B. And they do a great job of defining it. And I do like also the characters, the supporting players. They've got a great cast. Jimmy Simpson is fantastic in this. I mean, I love seeing him in almost anything, but he's really, really fun in this. And he's fun, you know, playing the different versions of himself, which are surprising. And the same thing with, oh my God, I can't,
Jennifer I'm so Connelly. Terrible.
Jennifer Connelly, thank you. She has fun with it too, playing variations on her character. And you do believe very much that, you know, even though he doesn't have a perfect life, because, you know, his career never went the way it was supposed to and all that, that nevertheless, he's very happy with his yeah. life the way it is. He loves his wife. He loves his child. He's content being where he is. He has friends that he cares about. He's well-liked in the neighborhood, you know, just all of these things. So you figure there's got to be an emptiness in Jason B. This right. this obviously. Hole in his life yeah. that would make him do this.
Right.
And so trying to find that out and find out the specifics of that is fascinating. So I really like the show from the beginning. I understand it's not getting great reviews, and I'm not sure why. Maybe it's not as wildly edgy. Different and exciting or edgy as people would like, but I think it's just a really solid story with really compelling characters.
All right, well, let's move on. I think we're all saying, yeah, let's give it a shot if you haven't so far.
Yeah, definitely.
Next up, we're going to talk about The Boys, but we're only going to talk about the first two, and we'll do two or three next time. So the first two episodes of The Boys get you back in. It doesn't – I was expecting to give us a previously from Gen V, because Gen V, the end of Gen V, has both – Homelander and what's his name?
A-Train?
Butcher.
Oh, Butcher?
Yeah, Butcher. And in the finale of Gen V, Butcher and Homelander are in the episode. And something big happens at the end of that. And I thought in the previously they would like give you that information, but they don't. They actually kind of just mention it in the dialogue. They're like, oh, thank you for saving me from that massacre. But, you know, if you don't know what massacre she's talking about, it seems odd. You know what I mean? And then Butcher talks about this virus. He's like, oh, I know you have the virus. And we, if you watch Gen B, you know what virus he's talking about. But if you don't, then you don't know what virus she's talking about. So it's such a weird thing. Like, did you guys all watch Gen B or no?
Yeah, I did.
Yes.
I didn't.
Did you understand about the virus and about the massacre?
I figured that it happened sometime, so whatever.
So you just kind of blew it off like it was.
Just rolled with it.
So what do you think the virus is?
That they're trying to find a way to kill either Homelander or What's-Her-Face.
The virus kills anyone who is a soup. So it attacks anybody who's a soup, but it leaves regular humans alone.
The normals around.
Yep. And that's in Gen V, they were working on that virus pretty much the whole season. And then at the end, but the big deal is at the very end, what's her name?
Soldier Boy.
That can explode people's heads. She got a copy of the virus, but Butcher found out about the virus. So
the vice presidential candidate.
Yeah. She the explodey head chick. I didn't know she was invulnerable. I knew she could explode people's heads, but I didn't know that you couldn't hurt her.
That's the first time that they actually did that. That I was like, really?
Yeah,
that was a new
reference. Though what she turned her daughter into was crazy.
That was nuts.
Oh my, I mean, I know you don't have you can't control, like once you give them the shot, you can't control what their power is. But whoa, she turned her daughter into a tentacle face-eating monster. Like, ooh, that was nasty.
Yeah. I mean, just the fact that she could do that to her daughter in the first place, because you don't know what that thing is going to do. I mean, it could give them a superpower that's really great, or it could make them, you know, it could ruin their life and make it impossible for them to even be in public. Right. There's just no way of knowing, or it could kill them outright. So it really gives you an idea of how ruthless she is, that she's willing to go there.
That is crazy. Like, she's not a good mom.
Well, I don't think anybody in this show qualifies as either a mom or a dad or a son or a daughter of the year. It's not that kind of show.
No.
Huey's almost the closest to being kind of a normal, kind of good person.
Oh, but I love this conversation with his mom. That was the second episode. Because she's like, I promise. And he freaked out about the I promise. And you don't know why he's freaking out about it. Like, he's talking to himself and he's doing all this. And you're just like, what is going on? And so when he finally gives you the explanation of what the I promise meant to him, you're just like, whoa. The fact that the mom dared to show up at this hospital, like, what? Like, that's...
Well, the thing is, the mom, off camera, the mom and the dad had rekindled some kind of, you know...
I get it, but she hasn't... But why would you do that with the husband and not talk to your son at all? Like, that's the thing that's crazy. And then just
Because she had a right to be afraid of how he would react, which was validated by how he reacted.
Yes.
I was surprised how prescient some of the events in these first two episodes was compared to where we are in real life. And yes,
with the trials and stuff?
They knew that there were certain parallels, but then the jury verdict thing, which, like, oh my gosh, it's like, whoa. And I think one of the most sinister characters on the show and just introduced in this season is Sister Sage.
Oh,
the
world's
smartest woman. Yeah. Because again, she's like analyzing everything and saying, this is what you got to do.
Well, smartest doesn't necessarily mean most moral.
Oh, no.
But what's interesting to me is she's smart enough, because at first you're thinking, why is she helping him? Why is she helping him? Like, and she is helping him to a degree, but I also think she's playing against him.
Oh,
there's no way that she's using him. Know that at some point his ego is going to force him to kill her. So, I mean, I'm not the smartest person in the world, and I can see it. You know what I mean?
Well, just like A-Train said, if she was so smart, she should have learned how to keep her blank mouth shut.
Right.
Before she got kicked out of that junior group. No, it's, I'm still ambivalent about watching. I just feel so dirty after watching this show, between the sex and the violence and the violence and the sex. It's like, you know, at least there was nothing that made me want to pressure wash my eyeballs like that.
I mean, Splinter Cell guy.
Oh,
kind of gross.
Ugh.
I have to say that was, and what's funny is that guy's from Supernatural and he played God.
Yes, that is Chuck. That is Chuck slash God.
Yes.
And so I will never be able to watch his scenes the same again.
He played God for like three or four seasons of Supernatural. And I'm just like, so Kripke, who knows this, cast this dude as God, has now cast him in his new show as this really creepy, just, character. And I was like, that was very deliberate. I see what you did, Kripke.
He does look very different. When I was looking at him, I was thinking, I've seen him in something. I just can't place where.
Are you sure that's the same dude?
It's the same, because I read an article that said that actually, because even when I was looking at the two pictures together, I was like, really? It's definitely him. It's just, guy. You know, he looks radically different. And who knew he was so free with showing off his attributes. Wow. Okay. But yeah, that was a lot.
That was a lot. But I mean, other than that, the story itself, where they're going with the story, I think is really interesting. And I like that they're focusing on Homelander's mortality. Like,
he's collecting his gray pubic hairs. Ew.
I didn't say he was doing it well. I just said that he's dealing
we all have our coping mechanisms.
You know,
but yeah, it lets you know that he is not completely invulnerable. He's not immortal,
right?
Is the thing, and he is having to deal with that reality. So,
as much as he says he's superior to humans, he's still gonna die like everybody else. And that's the thing, that why he's freaking out about his son. He wants his son to be his clone. And his son is uninterested, like, not even a little bit.
Although his son gets frustrated when he shows up at his solo.
I think it's not frustrated, angry. I think he's really just surprised, and he's not thinking. And when he pushes that guy, he's not pushing him out of anger. He's really just thrown. He's like thrown that his dad is there,
and he's just reacting and he's not paying attention to what he's doing. And he just pushes him and he's like, holy crap. So he did not mean to do that.
Yeah, he doesn't know his own strength. And yes. He reacts to that in a way that is very different from his father. I mean, he has a moral core.
Right. He was raised by a good mom versus Homelander, who was raised in a lab.
Yeah. So, I mean, his father is a psychopath. He is not. Right. And
would you say psychopath or sociopath?
He's a sociopath.
I would say full on psychopath.
No,
but I would say full on. He murders people and he doesn't care. And
he's both, because he genuinely doesn't feel human emotions. I think there's certain.
Yeah, but that's true for psychopaths as well. I mean, really, you know, clinically, they're both the same thing. I know other people tend to think psychopath is where you take it a step further and actually start killing people, but it's the same disorder. It's the same neurological failure to be able to empathize with other people. To a psychopath and a sociopath, other people are just things. They're just props
and
in their own personal
play. He literally says it. He says
he's trying to teach it to Ryan.
Yeah.
And then Sister Sage tells freaking Fish Boy, why can't I think Deep, basically, why do you let her talk to you like that?
I think...
Well, she's manipulating.
She's manipulating him. I don't think that's really her philosophy necessarily. She's trying to sow discord in the group.
Well, she
and
definitely
so that was
good.
All that was about. That was just about sowing discord.
Yeah, she is purely Machiavellian in her...
But how about A-Train showing a little bit of class by giving giving Starlight and Huey the proof to get the Starlighters
out. Guys off, right?
Yeah.
For the murders they didn't commit.
Right.
Yeah, I like seeing another side to A-Train, because they've really gone so hard on the sociopathic nature of his personality.
With him a bit. So like in season 2, he was kind of on a redemption arc, and then they were like, oh, never mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they're kind of back. Because the thing is, he's always shown that he has a line that he doesn't want to cross. And when he murdered Huey's girlfriend at the very beginning, he was high, he was on drugs, he wasn't...
Yeah, it was an accident. It wasn't deliberate.
And he's never really deliberately tried to hurt somebody before. And they're showing that he does have a lot... Like, there is a place where he doesn't want to go. It's not that he's a morally good person, because he's not. That's not at all. But
how about the new black noir not realizing, shut the blank up, dude?
Yeah, well, because I was like, how did black noir, I was like, how did he survive his injuries? Oh, he didn't.
It's a new guy.
Pretending to be him, which is so funny, because the dude was like, I don't think I'm getting the proper set directions. I feel like no one's communicating.
What's my motivation?
Yeah.
Your motivation is shutting up.
And then he was like, do we kill people all the time? Is that a thing that we do?
How about the Will Ferrell cameo?
Oh, that was great. That was great, because when it starts off, I was like, man, this feels more racist than normal. Like, I was like, what's going on with this? And then when Will Ferrell showed up, I was like, oh, it's a movie. Like, I was like, and then he was like, I didn't want to give too many blindside feels. I was like, dude, that was 100% blindside.
I love Deep and the Octopus.
You
know who's doing the voice of that? That's Tilda Swinton.
Oh.
I want them to go have their happy ending. They should go in the ocean and live together. It would be sweet.
You wouldn't have to worry about all the craziness.
So I liked The Boys. I thought the episodes were good. And like you said, it is, and then TruthCon was crazy. Like, oh my God, all of that was insane. So I do feel like it's very much ripped from the headlines that they're doing.
Yep.
They're going heavy into politics.
But just the fact that they shot this a while back.
Yeah.
And it's like, it feels like it could have been shot yesterday.
Yeah. He's doing a good job. So thumbs up for me. All right, let's move on. We're going to talk about Bridgerton. And because, again, my fault, we're behind on Bridgerton. So instead of talking about the new block that literally just dropped, we're behind two episodes.
So we're going to talk about episode 3 and 4. And when I say we, I mean not me, because I am not really feeling the whole romantic period.
Heaving bosoms.
You're not into bedpost and buttocks.
I just, every time I try to hit play on it, I'm just like, I can't do it. So, I mean, maybe I'll be in the mood later. I'm just not in the mood for it right now. So you guys go forth, talk about it. You got about 5 minutes, maybe 10, but then we got to move on. We got one more show to talk about after this.
I'm digging. I mean, I devoured both halves of season 3. So basically in one afternoon evening, I watched each block of 4 episodes. Episode 3, Penelope has, even though Penelope's been pining for Colin, she's got a new guy, suitor, prospective suitor, who she catches the eye of, and he's a vegetarian and an animal rights activist, which for back then, everybody's like, oh, he's just but he's into her. She's sort of kind of into him, even though he's not Colin. And I kind of feel sorry for the dude because, you know, he seems like a really decent guy, except for what's eventually going to doom that possibility is he's planning to go off on these nature conservation trips for long stretches at a time, which that's not what she wants for in a mate. So,
yeah.
And there's a whole incident with a balloon, and Colin gets to be the hero, and Bridgerton, you know, Shonda knows what female audiences want. Hot guys, great costumes, you know, some, you know, very good, you know, well, tasteful sex scenes. It's not a surprise this is a monster hit. And evidently, it pumped $250 million into the EU economy this season.
Wow.
Really? Wow. Okay.
Oh, sorry. Not dollars, euros into the European economy.
Well, okay.
So, that's more.
That's even more.
Bridgerton saves the EU. But I'm in. I love it. And I really like, I'm blanking the actor who plays Penelope, Nicola Coughlan. I've always thought she was one of the more interesting female characters. And I must not have been alone because they put her front and center for, they switched the order of the books they were adapting. This is book 4 instead of 3 to put the Colin Penelope romance front and center. But I just like, she feels kind of like a Jane Austen heroine. And I'm a sucker for Jane Austen. Pretty much everything.
Well, I think part of the reason that they moved this up is because it is one of their more interesting stories and the thing that people are most invested in. After all, Penelope is the one who does Lady Whistledown, and that whole, you know, the whole mystery around that everybody's wondering who she is and all of that. So I think, you know, there's more investment in her character, which is why they brought it up. But it is. I'm loving this season. I really am. I think they really got into what makes this show fun to watch, which is, you know, these characters getting together and pining for each other and the sexual tension and all the rest and the gorgeous costumes and everything else. I think, you know, it's just, this is just firing on all cylinders. Last season, it was really just boring. I'm sorry I didn't care about anybody. But this, you know, every time they start going into Penelope and Colin, I'm there. They also talk about the relationship between the younger sister who was away at school and who plays the piano, and she's been singled out by the queen.
Francesca?
Yeah. And they get into her relationship, and I think she's boring as hell. And it's like every time she's on, it's like, oh, my opportunity to make a sandwich or rest my eyes, you know? but when they start getting into Penelope and Colin, it's like, yes, I'm there. Cause all of that is great.
Yeah. You know, I'm not expecting much from Bridgerton. It's like, as I'm watching it, it certainly isn't as good as Jane Austen, but.
Oh no.
But, you know, it has no real, you know, it's not social commentary and it's not, you know, there's not a lot going on except a romance. You know, it's really like a big fat romance novel. And it's fun to watch it The costumes aren't even, you know, at this point, remotely accurate. The fabrics that they're using, I mean, there's like gold and green lamé, and there's like, you know, sequins, and there's like
sparkle,
I mean,
metallics, and you know, things like that.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah, because it really bothered me in the first season. It's like, what are they doing? And I've let go of that completely.
Yes,
it's like, yeah, that looks,
oh,
you know, something that looks like something from Doctor Who, but I'm totally on board with that. That's great.
Yes, yes. So I'm having fun with the costumes this season, where I'm just kind of like admiring them for their, you know, the needlework and the handiwork and the, you know, and the number of feathers they're using, and, you know, and even the hats that the fascinators that they're using, making with the hair, the wigs, all of it. Like, it's a feast for the eyes, you know. It's just a fun, light, fluffy show. You know, there's nothing too compelling about it, but. You know, the kind of whistle down aspect of it, the, you know, the, there has to be some sort of, not have to be, but a mystery aspect makes it a little bit, you know, more interesting than just a romance. And there has to be, you know, boy finds girl loses boy, kind of whatever, you know, there has to be some sort of a problem that, you know, kind of comes up and stuff. So I'm just watching it as a light, it's very fan fiction-y. It's very much give the woman, you know, everything that she, you want. And so it's very light fare. I mean, very light fare. I recommend it as a show that you put your mind on a shelf and you just, you know, sit and you watch and you smile and you just watch your main characters kind of dance around each other, literally and figuratively. Yeah, so
it's cotton candy for the brain.
Yeah,
it is, but it's loads of fun. It really is.
Okay, speaking of which, I'm going to use this to transition to our next show, which is Doctor Who, which had its Bridgerton episode, which
yes,
I thought was really timely and was actually fantastic. And somebody was like, "If you like this, why didn't you watch Bridgerton?" I was like, "Did it have monsters eating people?" I mean, this show,
they desiccated them.
Yes, I'm just like skin changing and you know, shapeshifters. Did Bridgerton have that? And lightning? I was like, if you don't have any aliens, no spaceships, no bounty hunters, it's not quite the same. So for me, what I really liked about this episode of Doctor Who, which might have been my favorite, was just the banter between the Doctor and the bounty hunter. Rogue,
played by
which I'm putting his name
Tony on. Nominee Jonathan Groff.
Yeah, he was fantastic, and I loved just all their interactions and how they just were just bouncing off each other, and the chemistry between the two characters. I really, really liked it. And then they had the dances that were very, and they kept name dropping Bridgerton, which I thought was really funny.
That was funny.
They just did it once, I think.
No, they mentioned it more than once.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I know that Ruby said, "Oh my Bridgerton."
Yes.
When she saw the dance.
And then they talked about cosplay and they did all of that. And it was,
and they also did it with the music too, with the,
right,
the
I thought
Bridgerton like
was...
takes on things like Poker Face and
right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And I thought that was really cool. And they had them all dancing and they had fights. They had the whole thing. And it was just a sweet, fun episode for me.
Aside from the aliens killing people.
Okay, sure.
There was taking
that. That was that. There were a lot of murders that happened, but I really just liked the Doctor's banter, and I liked Ruby, you know, watching a relationship like she's trying to watch between the bookshelves like she's watching television, and then of course she knocks all the books and almost knocks herself unconscious. And I liked the twist of the character that she thought the person that she thought was now her new friend ended up being one of the aliens. And all of that, I thought it was just a fun episode. So I had a good fun one. I had a good time with that one.
Co-written by Kate Herron, who was one of the Loki directors for season one.
Oh. So thoughts of this episode other than me? What'd you guys think?
Yeah, I thought... Oh, go ahead, Allison.
Well, I just had a completely different take on this episode. I was the opposite. I was really looking forward to this episode because I do love Bridgerton and I'm a sucker for anything that's historical, and Regency period especially I love, And so Jonathan Groff, I'm a huge fan of. So, you know, it was like everything that I should love in an episode. I was like sitting there waiting for it, and I was unimpressed. It just seemed like they said, let's do a Bridgerton episode.
Sure,
now, what is it
going to
be about? But that's the thing. They said, let's do this. Okay, what is it going to be about? We'll get
aliens.
You know, it's the aliens and the, I don't know, maybe shapeshift something about birds and cosplay. We'll do it when we do it. And it just felt badly thought out. I wasn't interested in the characters. I wasn't interested in the story. I normally love Jonathan Groff, but he felt like it felt like he was doing a read through, like he'd just been handed the script and hadn't really gotten his character yet. There was no chemistry at all between him and Shuti.
Totally disagree on that.
And I mean, it was like all the things that ought to work, and it just didn't for me. It just felt really, really amateurish and bland and half thought out. And I wasn't into any of it. And of course, Shuti cried again because that's what he does.
However, in this particular case, I felt like this was the one time.
No,
the
it wasn't.
One time where I was like, okay, tears kind of make sense. Every other time, I was like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah, no, it's not even here. It's sorry. It's because it's become such a thing. It's like
it
all
has.
He knows how to do with his character.
I'm not disagreeing, but I got teary eyed in that part. So I kind of was like, all right, I'll let this one pass. But Yusa and Tom, what do you guys think?
I enjoyed it. I liked it. I thought it was fun. I like, you know, they knew they were in on the joke. I mean, they kept mentioning Bridgerton, you know, a lot. I liked the concept of aliens cosplaying, like taking, like, what was their motivation? They wanted to like play different characters. And so that's
one character, right?
Yeah. And that's why they wanted to like take over their lives and be so, like, that kind of made sense to me. Like, you know, we've shapeshifters and body snatchers, you know, we've seen that for years. But like to actually explain it off as like bored aliens who are cosplaying and trying to like, you know, it pure entertainment, like that's not a, you know, something that I've run across as far as body snatching aliens has been, you know, before. So, and it makes sense that they would be doing this in this Bridgerton kind of style with the clothing and the drama and like, oh, this sounds like this is going to be really interesting. Like there's going to be scandal and stuff. So like, it all kind of made sense in the world that they created. So I thought it was fun. I mean, Bridgerton itself is a light kind of a thing. And so they took a light, like a light show or a light kind of a thing, and they made fun of it and they kind of went with it, and it was just light and sweet, and I thought that the I don't know if the chemistry between the two of them was like super strong, but I did love the twist, and I liked, you know, that it seemed a little rushed. I will say that it seemed like it was a little bit rushed for sure. You know, but I liked the twist at the end where he replaces Ruby. I was not expecting that. So I thought that was really good. And yes, I'm down the middle with the whole tears thing. I mean, if there is a time to cry, you know, that would be it. But like, he doesn't need to cry. So like,
every,
you know, that
episode, I agree.
Yeah. Every episode. So it's less powerful. So it doesn't really, you know, matter to me at that point. Tom, you were going to say something?
The problem with the tears, and as soon as Ruby got stuck, I'm like, oh, he's going to cry. And then Allison's going to be right again. Not that that's a problem.
Not that.
Here's the problem. If he cries at everything, then he'll cry at anything.
Yeah, and then it has no impact.
It ceases to have
any meaning whatsoever.
Right. It loses its impact. So I thought it was, part of me was like, why not just bring Captain Jack? But Captain and Jack and the Doctor don't have a... That's not the extent of their relationship. So I understand why they had to bring a new character in. I thought it was too forced. And to go from, you know, we don't know who each other are, to you're obviously the bad guy, to, oh, I'm in love with you. It felt a little.
I don't think they were saying they were in love with each other. I think they were doing that to basically cause a scandal, and that was the scandal of it.
No, but there was supposed to be a genuine bond between them.
Yeah. There was a genuine bond.
He hadn't done that, he would have gone off with the doctor to be his new companion. And I think that there was supposed to be real chemistry between them.
There was real chemistry. I'm just saying it's not love. I'm just saying I didn't think they went from enemies to being in love in 5 minutes. But,
and also, I think that the there was a weird thing they did at the end when, you know, he sacrifices himself and the last thing he says is
find me.
Then we get to the end and the doctor really doesn't seem like he's inclined to go looking.
Yeah, and it's like, well, you got over that relationship fast.
Well, when you get your life out of order, you know, whatever.
Well,
I don't know, it's just not the right way you end that.
I'm sure we're going to see that character again. He just basically was like, we don't know. I don't know what dimension he's in, and there are a million dimensions, so how would I even start? But you're right. He didn't seem like he was even going to start looking, which kind of was like, dude, all right.
He just got way too happy at the end. There should have been a haunting kind of thing.
But it was a fake happy, and we saw that it was a fake. It was fake. So I was okay with that. But anyway, we need to move on. We've been talking for quite too long, but Tom, unless you have one more thing you want to say. Oh, wait, we
have a second episode.
I just remembered that. I was like, oh, we have one more episode.
There's two.
So the other episode is part one of two. I think this is called the something of Ruby Sunday.
The Legend of Ruby Sunday.
Right. And I don't even know what to think about this particular episode because it was.
I didn't even understand it.
Well, and that's. The thing is, I feel like I can't judge this episode without part two, because they basically, the beginning of the episode started cool, but then they introduced this villain that we're supposed to kind of have known before.
It's not an introduction, it's a fourth Doctor villain.
Yeah, if you were into classic Who, I mean, Tom Baker is my Doctor. So I knew
my
exactly,
doctor.
And my, well, actually I sort of saw Peter, John Pertwee rather, beforehand, but Tom Baker was my doctor. That was the one who I saw in real time. And so I know that particular, episode that villain comes from, Pyramids of Mars, which it was one of my favorite episodes. I thought that was, I think it was a four-party. It was a great episode. But I just burst out laughing when they said Sutek, because, I mean, he was dispatched that fast by Tom Baker. He was a one-off villain, and he spent 99% of his screen time stuck to a chair. So he wasn't super frightening, you know? And to bring him back now as, like, the ultimate bad guy, the god of all gods, is just, it's a little overmuch. I just couldn't take it seriously. I have no idea who he is.
I'm just glad it wasn't the Master or the Daleks.
That's also true.
Cybermen.
That's also true.
Because they have gone to those wells far
way too often.
But the thing, even more so than your tears, my thing is the Doctor's always scared. Like every episode.
Too scared.
Every episode we've seen this season, he's been scared. So
That's a writing and a direction problem.
That is.
Yeah.
Because if they had saved it for this episode and then he's scared, then I would have been scared. But because he's been scared every episode this season, I'm like, is he scary? Should I be scared? Like, I don't know. And so that was the thing about this episode. I feel like I can't judge it properly because I don't have part two. It's part one of two parts. I don't have part two. I'm confused about who this guy is, what's going on. They were leading us to believe that this woman, Susan, was going to be his granddaughter, which I thought was going to be cool. And then they were like, psych, you thought I was going to be related to you, but I'm not, you know? And I was just like, okay. That was weird. I was like, why would you set that up and then not do anything with it?
The whole episode felt like that. It felt like they had like three different plot lines going on and they just smushed them together and you know, whatever they did, it's like roll it up in a ball and shoot it all now. And none of it came together. None of it made sense.
The conflict of something was going on with his TARDIS, which normally he would have run immediately to try to fix,
But then they were like, oh, but now his granddaughter at the same time. What is he going to do?
And then there's Ruby Sunday. What's going on with her mother? Well,
they,
and the
then they're trying
the
to say, oh, that's connected. And I was like, I don't understand.
They may bring it together in the second part, but in the first part,
it's just
confusion.
I'm not going to judge anything at this point because I don't know where this is going. I genuinely do not understand what's happening. So,
are they prepping a unit spinoff?
Not that I've heard.
They've talked about that in the past, but I don't know that they've talked about it more recently.
And it seems like we've got a lot of introductions to a lot of characters as if we might be doing this in the future.
Yeah,
they've talked about it before, but nothing's ever really come of it.
I haven't heard anything either.
But now they got that Disney money.
but I don't even know really what to say about the second episode because I don't know where it's going, what's happening. So I'd like to maybe let's shelve that and we discuss it together when we get part two. How about
sure.
that?
That's fair.
Okay.
All right. So if you guys have any questions or comments, you can leave them at tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter or on Facebook. You listen to us on fifthpointradio.com, Next Degree to Geeks, iTunes, and now YouTube. And we'll talk to you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.